Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. You know, I don't think I've ever seen a time in our history when we have been busier with news. There is so much going on right now. Oh, yeah, okay, Pearl Harbor. All right, you know, absolute crises, things like that. But in terms of just all-around news right now, Bill Fecky's on the line. I'm going to get to Bill in just a second here. But I just want to take a minute to kind of make an overall strategy of where the show, some of the things, with, you know, so the theme of today. And the theme for me, and we're going to cover just a ton of different issues, but it's who's in charge of our government right now? We've got an illegal, insurrection going on. We've got two people who remind me of Louis XIV and Marie Antoinette. They don't care. They stole the election, so they take no responsibility for governing the country. They're just declaring things. It's the love of power. If the love of money is the root of all evil, the love of power is the root of all destruction. And I'm just making this up as I go along. So I titled the show today, Obama's Decisions, Biden's Signatures, Trump's Policies. Because the irony of the whole thing is that I really believe this is how the country's being run right now. Obama's behind the scene making all the decisions. You look at everything from the New Deal to the Green New Deal, you know, which is the new infrastructure bill, all right? Packing the Supreme Court. You look at the stimulus package, which, of course, you know, that and the infrastructure are both, you know, not reconciliation bills and can be stopped by Republicans at any time. You look at that. Those are Obama's decisions. He's the one pulling the strings. He's the one making all the policies. Biden is just simply there to sign the bills. He's the public face. You know, they had to have an old white guy there because the Democrats are a bunch of racists. But the ironic truth, the strange thing about this is that they're going to have to patch up the wall. They're going to have to implement Trump policies, but they're going to have to call them Biden policies. It's like when they co-opted the vaccine program that Trump designed, Warp Speed. Now, I'm against it, but in terms of what's going on, you look at this, and there, this was a Trump policy. This is a Trump victory. And Biden, you know, at the urging of Obama, who told him that you take this over, you take credit for it. You know, Obama's famous for blaming everybody else and taking credit for things he didn't do. You know, and so this is where we are right now. So if there's one theme to the show, it's that the country is being basically run by Obama. This is his third term, to which he's not entitled. Biden's just sitting there signing things, has no idea what he's doing. I watched his speech yesterday. You know he'd rather be on a porch in a rocking chair watching the sunset. And Trump is, I don't know what he's doing either, being frustrated as hell, thinking, look, they're implementing my policy. That's where we stand. On that note, let's get to Bill, and I'll be right back.
On Tonight, Action Radio presents the Fecky Report.
Good morning, Action Radio Land. Greg, it's raining here in Pensacola yet again on another Thursday. Seems like it's turning into a habit here every time I'm on the air. But I have some breaking news. I have some breaking news. Okay?
Oh, feel free, Greg.
That you do not know, that the general public does not know about. Ooh. You know how we've been discussing Matt Gaetz the last 2 or 3 weeks, right?
Why, yes, we have.
This has nothing to do with it.
He thinks he's funny this morning, folks. Do tell, Bill.
I do. Okay.
I've got a secret.
So I was reading this little trivia thing last night, and mm-hmm. I found this very interesting. Did you know Thomas Jefferson was still alive when Harriet Tubman was born? And Harriet Tubman was still alive when Ronald Reagan was born.
Okay.
I just found that kind of fascinating when you think about it, that Jefferson and Reagan were only one generation apart.
Are they related to Harriet Tubman?
No, not at all.
Oh, I was just curious.
Yeah, no, I just found that kind of interesting.
Well, no, I know what you mean.
When you think
though,
about
yeah.
the founders, Yeah, when you think about the founders and you think about Ronald Reagan and what he meant for the conservative movement, which I think was always kind of false. I didn't find him to be ultra-conservative. You know, but then you got Harriet Tubman, who is really part of a whole different era. I mean, you're talking about people from three different eras, but yet they're all connected within one generation.
Yeah, she was armed, too, by the way.
Harriet
Tubman. She would have belonged to the NRA. As Harriet Tubman
would
have.
She carried, definitely.
She carried, yeah. It's really interesting, the whole history of, and now there are black conservatives becoming Republicans like black conservatives did in the 1800s. That's a fascinating study. I want to look more into that and explore that as shows. As yesterday I was exploring the whole, you know, systemic racism thing and trying to blow that out of the water with what happened at the Milton City Council. But what you do is you raise a really interesting point. There are people today whose grandparents knew their grandparents in the Civil War. So if you look at the lifespan of a human being, let's just say 80 years, you know, and then the person at the end of their life at 80, you know, and someone's born within a year of that, you know, they live another 80 years, you know, you go through, that's 160 years, you know, and you go through another person, that's another 240 years. That's our whole history.
Altogether. Yeah.
Yeah. So three people living 80 years, you know, connected by the year they died to the year somebody was born. That's our whole history.
Yeah.
You know, so that's...
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating, isn't it?
It really is, because things happen fast here. What do they hear about Action Radio? Who's born the year Action Radio got started, and what happened there? You know, the year people decided to create a citizen legislature as part of a radio show. You know, yeah.
Speaking of legislature...
Yes.
You know, legislation. We got here in the Florida House, you know, they're in session right now, and so is the Senate, obviously. So they're really deciding how much of a dictatorship they want to turn into, and that's the only way I can really put it. Yeah, I know it's hard to believe that government wants to take over, but what they're doing right now is the Florida House has been slowly taking over local governments. Now, the way... It's structured to begin with is that city and county governments are just a subsidiary, you know, for lack of a better term, subsidiary of the state government. You know, they're not separate entities at all, but there's always been like an unwritten local rule law that, you know, that everyone's always followed. You know, whatever the local city, county governments want to do, that's fine. Over the past couple of years, the state has really been pulling back on that. Here in Pensacola, where Airbnb, of course, all in Florida, Airbnb is one of the big things that the state has taken control of and said and told the local government you can't restrict Airbnb establishments, which here on Pensacola Beach they're trying to, because we'd have these huge houses that will sleep 20 people. They call it a house, they call it an Airbnb, and then they're able to rent it out or whatever. And, you know, it's great. Everything's great with that, except for when, you know, where does it change from an Airbnb into a hotel? You know, and that's the major fight that's going on right now here in Florida. And local governments are trying to stop it a little bit, because you've got people who actually live on Pensacola Beach, but then you got these people who come in and rent these houses and throw parties all night long. And, you know, so there's been a lot of complaints about that. It's been a big issue all up and down Florida, and I'm sure other places like Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, is probably running the same problem, but it's, you know, definitely here in Florida. Well, the Florida House decided that local governments can't make restrictions on Airbnbs. So I'm kind of torn on that particular one.
Well,
one
as long as the laws are still in place to, you know, if someone throws an all-night party, like you said. So in other words, it's like guns. It's not the ownership of guns that's the problem. It's the misuse of them. It's not the Airbnb that's the problem. It's the people who come there and abuse with traffic and parking in bad places and throwing all night parties and screwing up the beach and doing things like that. So the guests have to have a policy. And Airbnb, actually, I've had the head of Airbnb in Florida on, and they're very strict. They do evaluations on people. It's like Uber. In other words, if you're an abusive guest, you don't get to go back. And so the other argument is do you let people – you know, do you restrict people from using their personal property for business? You know, and Airbnb, I think, makes perfect sense. I mean, they literally started as an air mattress in San Francisco. You know, I got a bit of knowledge about Airbnb. It's really quite fascinating. I've used it. When I went to CPAC in 2018, I stayed in Airbnb. It was great. It was a wonderful house. I talked to the family. You know, I had a couple of fascinating conversations with the people there. Airbnb is fabulous. The problem is if the guests abuse it, but that goes for homeowners too. So if you throw an all-night party, you know, just because you stay at an Airbnb does not give you the right to throw an all-night party. So the police still have their police powers. They can still restrict the all-night party. They can still arrest the guests that are abusive, dangerous, you know, vandalizing or graffiti writing or anything like that, but that would apply to anybody. So as long as you let the Airbnb do what they want to do and people freely engage in commerce and then go after the people that break the local ordinances, local laws, local things like that, then you should have that nice balance of commerce with restrictions that would apply to anybody. That's how I would look at it.
Well, I do agree with that, and that has always been my argument too. But then when you start looking at the hotel aspect of it, mm-hmm. you know, hotels have much stringent requirements as far as handicap accessibility, sanitation wise that Airbnb doesn't have.
Mm-hmm.
So
then don't stay there.
When you talk about level playing field, there really isn't a level playing field. But I guess at the same time, you make that decision on what you want to do.
Well, a hotel isn't an Airbnb. They're two separate things. And I, you know, it's like you give people the option. If people want to stay at a lower cost alternative, they're not hotels. What this is really about, the hotels want to shut down Airbnb because they don't like the competition. Let's be blunt. That's what's really going on here.
Well, that's correct. Now, the second thing that I'm kind of torn on, but mm-hmm. like I said, I'm bundling them all together, even though when you look at them separately, there's two good and one bad here. And this is the other one that is, you know, depending on how you want to look at it. It's House mm-hmm. Bill 919, and it blocks local governments from determining what kind of fuel can be used in their county or city. So, you can't have, like, the city of Pensacola turn around and say, you are no longer allowed to use gas. You can only use solar or electric cars.
That's Californian. That's a Gavin Newsom thing. That's a very Californian thing that is filtering through here. And I'm sure that comes from the New Jersey, New York, Connecticut, Massachusetts transplants to Florida that have decided to run for the state legislature. You know what we really need is a 10-year residency requirement.
Greg, this blocks the ability of local governments to do that.
Oh, maybe I misheard you then.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Yeah. So this blocks local governments from being able to determine what type of fuel types they can and cannot use.
Why would they do that?
I think this is a good thing, first of all, because it keeps freedom open. Mm-hmm. And then, if I live in Escambia County, and if Escambia mm-hmm. County tomorrow decides, hey, you can no longer, get power from Gulf Power, you have to put solar panels on your roof.
Government. This isn't just government vehicles and government buildings. You're talking about the regulating. They're saying for everybody.
Yes.
Which now makes more sense. Okay, see, I missed that part. So that was my bad, because I thought you were saying that that government, you know, couldn't local governments couldn't institute electric vehicles if they wanted, which are kind of stupid actually, because the power plants are all fueled by natural gas, oil, and coal for the most part anyway, or nuclear. You know, so that's the big myth about electric power. There's nothing clean about it. You know, it's, you're just sourcing it differently.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as they're saying that I always believe in the carrot rather than the stick. If they want to encourage solar panels, you know, by offering tax deductions for people to put them in, I don't care. You know, that makes sense. You know, but maybe that's anti-competitive against the oil industry. Maybe industry should just stand on their own and their own merits. I mean, let me take that back.
Exactly.
As I think it through, but they shouldn't prevent, you know, if a county wants to have county vehicles that are all electric, I don't care. You know, I may object to it if it costs too much, or, you know, I might take it up at the county level, but I agree with that. The state should not be, I think I'm getting this issue confused here.
The last one, and this is the biggest one, and one's really going to reshape Florida as a whole. Now, here in Escambia County, we have what's called sector plans. Sector plans mm-hmm. is that you carve out a certain area and you designate part of that area for commercial, part for residential, part for agriculture, part for whatever. You know, mm-hmm. if it's in a beach area, it's a beach, blah, blah, blah. Great idea. It keeps things a little bit more organized. Citizens love it. I mean, overwhelmingly, over 80% of citizens love sector plans. But developers hate it. Developers hate it because usually residential is a little bit further out than they want. And usually the commercial is not there yet when the residential is being built. So now we have House Bill 11. There's two different House bills, 1101 and 421, and Senate Bill 1876 that will now restrict local governments from sector It's going to restrict local governments from blocking people the ability to opt out. So in other words, now you could opt out if you own property and you want to build a house, but it's in a commercial part of the sector plan, you can now opt out, and you no longer have to build commercial in that specific spot.
Does it work the other way?
It gives all power. Yes, it does work the other way, but it gives 100% power to developers. So now the developers are the ones who are going to determine what happens in your town, which they kind of do already, developers own the politicians anyway, so it kind of happens anyways. But now the state is going to supersede local governments and block sector plans from going into place. Very bad. The state has been working towards this for quite some time of total takeover of local governments, and these three bills are just another example of that.
Sometimes
there are good ones. Sometimes there's.
Where are they in the process?
So this last one is in the Judicial Committee review. Michelle Salzman, who's our local representative in the Tallahassee, she has come out and said, even though the committee hasn't voted on it, this thing's going through. Okay, I'm just telling you right now, this thing is going all the way through. Developers own all of our politicians. There's no way that this is being blocked. Michelle Salzman, even though they haven't voted on it yet, I think they vote on it today or tomorrow. I think probably today. I don't think they work Fridays. That she has verbally agreed to vote yes on it, and that we should have came to her sooner so she could have looked through the bill.
Has she voted yet?
We have a bunch of people that are. No, she has not voted yet, but because she gave a verbal okay on it, she's not going to turn her back on it, and she's going to keep it. You know, she's still going to vote yes on this. And
well, that's kind of stupid.
Remember, developers are the ones who gave her all of her money to get in office to begin with.
Okay.
So there's no way she's there's no way she's turning her back on them.
See, this is why I can never run for office. You know, I never run for office because, A, if I ever actually got in office, I'd only be there one term because all the people that funded me that wanted me to do whatever it is they wanted to do, I'd look them in the face and go, well, that doesn't make any sense. You know, screw you. And I'd be right out again. So that's why I have no intentions of running for office. But maybe call Michelle Salzman's office and find out or get something you can quote and maybe even bring the radio show tomorrow because she's been on the show. She knows me and I know her. And, you know, we don't talk every day or anything like that, but I'm just saying I've been in contact with her sporadically, you know, and this is something that would be well worth asking her. Can you change your vote? Can you at least think about it? You know, who knows? I'd be curious.
Send her the show. I mean, she basically came out on public Facebook and told them, no, sorry, it's too late. Even though it's not too late, she says it's not too late.
Who is that local state senator that Brockman or something like that? I mean, I'm terrible with names.
Brockman.
That voted for the alleged, you know, school safety act that was really a whole bunch of gun prohibitions and constitutional changes, you know, who said, well, I have to do something. No, you don't. You have to do the right thing.
Correct.
You have to do the constitutional thing. You don't have to just do something. This is that same kind of thing. Well, I've already committed to it. Well, what if new evidence comes up? That's like saying a juror partway through the trial saying, well, I'm convinced, okay, the person's guilty. And whatever new evidence emerges after that, I go, well, look, I've already, you know, made up my, I've already, you know, taken the evidence that I had so far and gone with that. That's a stupid way to legislate. It's a stupid way to be. You can't do that as a juror. And people that, and like I say, the Broxson quote, well, I had to do something. That's the worst reason for doing anything. You know, so now this
exactly.
is wrong. She's wrong on this one. I'll tell you what, though. Try and invite her on the show. I'd be happy to, you know, to hear her opinion on this as to why. You know, you never know. Give it a shot.
Yep. So, you know, so in also in the same subject of making a decision, we have a Philippine army, you know, the country of the Philippines. Their army has gone around their president, who's an absolute China supporter, dictator, just overall jerk.
Who's that?
President Duterte.
I'm not familiar with him.
We've talked about him on the show a couple times. Horrible man, in bed with China. He's invited China in. He's kicked the U.S. out. He has literally kicked the U.S. out. Yeah. But the Philippine army now has come to America, begged them to come in, and they have gone over the president's head and told China to get out. Now, a little background. Yes. So
now this is really interesting.
We may be seeing another Myanmar situation here in the Philippines pretty soon, because what's happening with President Duterte is he's allowing China to take over the Philippines. Philippines is a huge military strategic location. What Chinese have done, which many of you out there know because I've talked about it before, is they actually built an island in the South China Sea in between, just north of the Philippines, south of Taiwan. So now, and they have military equipment on there and everything. So now they have started a second island. And this is what's triggered the Philippine army to say get out, is that China is now creating a second island that they're just making out of nothing. I mean, talk about making a mountain out of a molehill. I mean, that's what they're doing. They're creating a whole island in the middle of the South China Sea.
How do they do this?
It's
like steel spars to the bottom of the ocean? Or how are they building these things?
Well, okay, so when you talk about South China Sea, it's not necessarily, you know, hundreds of feet down. You have volcanoes that come up. You got islands. So they find, you know, the more shallow waters. And then they start filling it in. You fill it in with boulders.
Like an archipelago kind of thing?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right.
That's exactly what it is. And instead of for wildlife, they're doing it with military bases. But what they're turning into here is that this will kind of be like a Suez Canal type of situation or a Panama Canal, where they're actually going to be able to block ships from coming into the South China Sea from the Pacific Ocean. And, you know,
are they on
right
both
now,
sides of the deep part? This is what it sounds like.
It's a huge. Okay, so now the north part of the South China Sea is very important. Huge oil resources there. Huge oil resources. Okay. Also, very rich in fish. You know, the fishing industry. So you have two huge resources right there that now China has stolen from the Philippines, because the Philippines and Taiwan used to always fish there. The Philippines actually was drilling oil there, and now they have been basically kicked out by China. And Philippine fishermen have been shot down in boat. You know, the boats have been sunk. They've been arrested by China because China's claiming that to be their property, and they're saying that they're trespassing on their property. So, you know, so the Philippine army is sick and tired of President Duterte just sitting around doing nothing. And so now the army is, you know, taking a stand. They've called the U.S. in. U.S. usually comes in and does training exercises up in that area anyways every year. Duterte stopped that, I think it was 2 years ago, when he said no more training exercises. Well, the USS Roosevelt is over there right now doing, air quotes, training exercises. So it should be kind of interesting to see the progression that has been happening over in the Philippines. I've been talking about it for about a year and a half, almost 2 years now, on the FETQ report on and off. You know, this may end up being our Vietnam of our era. Because you got China's influence that's really heavy in the Philippines right now. Because you got a president who's just bowing and catering to whatever China says. Only China products are going into there. It's a very, they're still on lockdown. On top of everything else, they're still on lockdown. They refuse to allow any other. They're not allowing any other vaccine to come into the country except for Sinovac, which is the Chinese vaccine, which has less than 50% accuracy.
Yeah, China's now. Here's a question though. China's even come out and said their vaccines aren't very effective, which I find fascinating that they would even admit that. So I'm trying to understand the motivation behind it. That sounds like a Claire Lopez question.
I'll tell
question.
You what the motivation is.
Okay.
The motivation behind it is, in the big joke in the Philippines, in the Philippine community here in America, they don't call it Sinovac, they call it Kickvac.
Okay. So who's getting the money? China's getting the money back from whom? Or how's this working?
Oh, no, President Duterte is the one who's getting the money back from China.
For pushing
China's selling it to the government.
Okay.
And then, then the politicians are getting a kickback from that.
And they require everybody to take it?
That's the requirement. If you want to leave the house, of course, he's not a complete idiot. He has made a couple exceptions because if he locks down the whole country again, the Philippines will turn into a fourth world country because all of American companies will pull out because there are a lot of call centers in Manila. And if he doesn't allow those people to work, then the call centers become useless and all the companies will pull out of the Philippines and that will totally bankrupt the country as a whole. So he is allowing call centers to work, but for the longest time he wasn't allowing them to take buses or trains. So these people were basically either sleeping at the office or if someone did live in Manila, they would pack like 30 people inside a tiny apartment to sleep so that they could work during the week because they weren't able to come from the province or like a suburb and work their way into and get into Manila because it was a total lockdown. He's making this very difficult. I mean, it's straight up communism what's happening right now in the Philippines. But now the army is slowly starting to take over. And on top of everything else, they can't get the word out properly because the president has already taken away the license of the top news station there because they were broadcasting the truth. And mm-hmm. he took their license away and gave the license to one of his supporters. So now it's only pro-president Duterte messaging that's coming out.
Yeah, which nobody believes anyway. Yeah.
Well, the problem is that they are believing it because they're not hearing what we're hearing here. They're not hearing the fact that it's been taken away. We talk about American voters being very stupid. In the Philippines, it's even worse.
Some American voters are stupid. They're ignorant of the facts because the facts are kept away from them. You look at social media. You look at all the things that we talk about, vote fraud. Those two fabulous articles from Gateway Pundit. On the fact that Arizona, I've been convinced for months, since the election and I first heard about this, they're going to be the first domino to fall. They're going to be the first ones to correct their election result, and that's going to change everything. But no one's talking about that because that information is being suppressed. The big tech folks are so scared of that, they won't even let you talk about it on their platforms. You get banned. Speaking of being banned, I was banned for talking about Dr. Fascist having his NIH, funds not going through oversight. To the Wuhan lab so they could do gain-of-function research so they could design, the coronavirus to fit the vaccines they've been working on for the last, decade. So this kind of – and we're the only ones talking about that. Everybody else is looking for the origin of the virus, and I'm the only one I know looking for the origin of the vaccine. So there's a huge dearth of information out there. But the Philippines fascinates me. I'm looking at a map right now. So I pulled this up. I've got the South China Sea, and I've got this line, this kind of passageway between Luzon, the northernmost island of the Philippines, and Taiwan. And it looks like the Luzon Strait has just a ton of islands up there. So if you get north of the Philippines, of the Big Island, where Manila is at the bottom of Luzon, and the top of it goes into this Luzon Strait, I think that's the key area you're talking about. Is that where the Chinese islands are? Is that their little gateway?
Yeah, that's where
it
is.
Makes sense.
Now, these islands, like I said, I've been up there before, and these islands are not islands how you think of it. They're basically maybe like a 100 by 100 square foot, or maybe 200 by 200 square foot area, very small, some of them are, maybe the size of a house, some of them are the size of a subdivision, You know, like they're that small. The map doesn't really kind of do it justice. And it depends if it's high tide or low tide, how many islands are actually visible.
Oh, interesting. Well, that makes sense. Yeah. Okay.
Yes. So that's where China's actually building onto those, and they're using those tiny islands as a building block to create these new bigger islands.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay. I was just looking for my Facebook post so I could send you the. Did I cancel it? No, I couldn't have. Well, I guess I did. All right, I'll figure it out. I wanted to send you the map that I found to see if that is a good representation, or if you want to post a map, maybe on the Fecky Report to talk about it. Yeah, this is fascinating. I know there was a site on this, and it was the Telegraph that was on the Fecky Report. I always want subscriptions. To get the good stuff, you know, this is why we have such a great network of people that bring these stories to us. But that was one of those interesting things. All right, so let me get you the map. And I've got Jonathan Mosley. He'll probably be checking in with us in a little bit, if not momentarily. Where's your window? Hang on, I'm going to find it here. I'm talking and doing it at the same time. You know, I should probably play something rather than just do this. Why don't I let you talk? I'll send you the map. Tell me what you think.
Yes. So, like I said, the Philippines has always been a very strategic place in the Pacific Ocean because you have a direct attack onto China, you have your direct attack onto Japan, you have because you cannot fly from Japan or China or from Japan all the way to Australia, for example. So the Philippines becomes really a very important hub because you have to stop in the Philippines to refuel in order to get to Australia when you're talking military planes. So there's a lot of military strategic spots in the Philippines that are very important. And of course, in South Philippines, you have the number one Muslim extremists in the world. They train there, which they've been allowed to under the Philippine government. But the army has gone in and started, has been fighting with them on and off. They go in and they fight for a while, then the president pulls them out, then they go in on their own again, the president pulls them out. Mindanao, is the southern part of the Philippines, has always been very heavily Muslim and one of the more dangerous spots in the Philippines. But if they could get that part under control, that would definitely be a key location for a base. When we were talking about a potential war with China, which is, it almost seems inevitable right now. But my biggest fear with a war with China is what happens to American economy at the same time, because if you thought last year we couldn't find items, there's going to be a shortage of everything if we start a war with China because of President Biden reversing all of President Trump's America First agenda. Now we no longer have, we don't have the factories making stuff still. And we're still relying on China, which we definitely need to get away from if we're going to start a war with them.
Yeah, well, who do you think's, in charge of our country right now? I mean, this goes to the original topic of the show, which is more of a theme to think about than anything else, because I don't have a major story on this. I'm just kind of speculating that we've got Obama behind the scenes making the decisions. Biden's just doing his signature on stuff. He's the figurehead. He's the face, and what they're actually doing is taking Trump policies and finding or trying to find a way to reinstitute Trump policies while calling them Biden policies. And Obama's, sort of realizing he has to do that to get the things he still wants to get through, which are the Green New Deal and the infrastructure bill, the guaranteed income with the more of this with the stimulus bill, both of which are, as I've said over and over again, are not reconciliation bills. And if the GOP had the slightest interest in actually being the GOP, they would say so and get those bills out of reconciliation and start arguing against them and make sure their filibuster never passed. But this is what they could be doing, but they're not. All right, looks like I've got Jonathan and I've got Pianki right here. I can say Pianki, actually, Bill,
right,
do you have more? Or?
I'm going to go ahead and earn my – I got to go earn my dollar for today. So next week we're going to talk about reparations because there is a bill in the federal government right now in Congress for reparations for Black Americans. So that'll be our subject for next week.
Well, that sounds like fun. Yeah, you know how much I love reparations. Hey, what about Native Americans? I think Black Americans should pay reparations to Native Americans. What? Huh?
Well, honestly, I mean, when you look at it, you know, the black Americans only make up, what, 14% of all of America, and Hispanics make up 19%. So catering to the lowest common denominator here, that's something to think about, too. But I have a different take on it, though, one that I think you'll be surprised about next week.
Okay. Well, I want to do a show on black supremacy. Pianki gave me the idea. In fact, he's here right now. All right. Thank you, sir. Let's do it next week. And we shall continue on. Bill's gone. Let me get Pianki, then I'll get Jonathan. And I'm going to skip your theme, Jonathan, because we played it last week. I like to do it kind of every other week because it takes a couple of minutes, and I know you've got limited time. So, Pianki, your point quickly, sir, then I'll get to Jonathan.
Well, you know, he left with that idea of reparation. Actually, black Americans would owe African tribes reparations for what their ancestors done to them. Call them destruction.
Do you know the real irony? Yeah. The real irony is that Democrats would owe Republicans reparations, or actually black Americans would owe Republicans reparations for saving them from, you know, the Union soldiers were basically Republicans and the Southern soldiers were basically Democrats. On that note, history gets to be a mess.
Yeah, absolutely right about that, too.
Oh, yeah, go ahead. Hold on, Jonathan. Go ahead, Pianki.
Yeah, the education system in the United States, especially as it applies to African-American youth, it should be looked at as a national emergency.
Well, I would abolish all government education because they've proven that they cannot possibly educate anymore. So we have to we definitely do something about that. Yeah. Well, and that's what I advocated that back when the schools were locked down. I said, great, they're locked down. Leave them locked down. Get rid of them. Anyway, I got to hold
you
up. Go ahead.
Yeah, when you look at when you're talking about China and going up against them, well, it's very difficult to do so if you don't have an educated population. Anyway, I'm anxious to hear what Jonathan's got to say.
Yeah, me too. I know you got limited time, Jonathan, so go for it. Leap right in. What's going on with the legal world?
Well, I think mostly what's dominating the legal world is trials and Black Lives Matter protests.
Okay.
And a lot of what you're talking about is very interesting. People may know that shooter of Ashley Babbitt in the January 6th protests was
say it again.
Everybody else.
You cut out for a second of the most important
the police
part.
Shooter whom they have not identified, apparently U.S. Capitol Police plain clothes person, has not been charged with the shooting death of Ashley Babbitt inside the Capitol. On January 6th. I'm sorry, I apologize. I'm rushing to court in a southern county here, so it's a little noisy. But that is without comment, but a white woman police officer of like 20 years who was actually a trainer for other police officers first resigned and then has been charged with second-degree manslaughter. In a shooting involving a stop in Minnesota, something called Brooklyn Center, which is is a suburb of where Derek Chauvin George Floyd.
Fading out just a little bit there. So, what's going on with the trial? What's the take on it that we're not hearing? I think we're losing Jonathan. That's no fun. I was just actually looking at my Facebook page for a couple of articles I found fascinating about the election. We'll talk about that probably tomorrow. That the Arizona – whoop, everybody's gone. Everybody's on the screen now. It's just me. I might as well talk to you then. This is going to be one of those days. Jonathan is in transit to court, so we're not going to have him for a whole long time anyway. And we've got about 20 minutes before Claire joins us, and she might even join us late too because we're used to having her come a little bit later. So I'm going to put oh, no, I think he's back now. Okay, good. It's radio. It's live. We just do what we do. So, yeah, I guess you're in a tough place wherever you're broadcasting or wherever you're calling from. You're back on the air now. So there you go.
I think I don't have a smartphone. I have a smart Alec phone, as I said. It just decides to do things on its own. So it's not only the obvious contradiction. The saying from show host here at WMAL that were it not for double standards, leftists would have no standards at all. It's now becoming mainstream. But it's also an opportunity to understand what's going on, as well as the fact that the justice, unfortunately, has become completely about politics and popular opinion. The very thing that our founders feared, and why we have statues of Lady Justice wearing a blindfold. It's supposed to not matter who you are, but of course it does. And increasingly, without question, you were asking offline about the Democrats wanting to pack the Supreme Court, which is, you know, nobody can be fooled by the fact that they want to do that because they want to change the law. They want to get results that they're not entitled to under the law by packing it forth. And as we were discussing offline, if the Democrats took control of the Supreme Court, would anybody notice? You know, would it be any different than what we're seeing now with a bunch of weenie conservative justices who say all the right things as we have to do them? So we've got this obvious contradiction. And I want to point out the woman, I've got it printed out here, but I'm also driving, who shot this gentleman in Brooks Center, Minnesota, has been charged with second-degree slaughter out of Minnesota law, which is not murder, but it does carry a penalty up to 10 years. And I'm gonna pull over and grab this.
It's funny you should say that. There was a case, there's an identical case. This happened several years ago when I was in San Francisco. There was a BART police officer. That's Bay Area Rapid Transit. He thought he was using a taser, and he shot a citizen in the back and killed him. You know, and that went on for years. He left the force. He was, you know, disgraced. He was disgusted. I don't know what kind of he had massive problems as well. He was like, you know, recently on the job. And one of the things they discovered was that the tasers look too much like guns. I think they've changed the handles on them, so it's obvious you're not holding a gun. But the tasers and the guns used to, you know, be fairly similar. And so this has happened before. And so I know it happened several years ago. Now it's happened again. So I'm curious to see what happens with this woman who, you know, mistook. You know, but if you look at it, hold it out in front of you, don't you know the difference? You know, I mean, you should, unless you're not trained properly and not ready for the job. Yeah.
And apparently it's not just a made-up story. The body cam video shows her warning, I'm going to tase you. I'm going to tase you. Stop. And then says, you know, after shot, oh, my God, I shot him.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently the confusion is not just some defense attorneys, you know.
Oh, no, they really think they have a taser in their hand. I know that. But that's the problem, is that I think the guns and the tasers feel too similar, and they're going on adrenaline. And I've taken some when I was in federal law enforcement briefly, you know, my very short customs career, I remember taking some of the defensive film things where they present you with scenarios, you know, shoot, no shoot. I was actually pretty good at those because I think pretty fast. But there are times, you know, the adrenaline does get going. And if you're in a real situation, and we practiced a bunch of real situations, but a real situation is always different. You know, it's like flight instruction. You can talk about teaching flying, but until you've actually done it, you have no idea the stresses involved and how fast you have to react sometimes. But that's part of the job. If you accept the job, you have to accept that you can tell the difference between a gun and a taser. That's just basic
but
to the job.
There is a concept. Back in my day, when we actually, you know, learned the law, followed it, called us, you know, which in the civil context would be called assumption of the risk. You know, there were cases we studied in law school, studied concepts which no longer apply. But the idea that somebody was trying to break into a shopping center, crawled on the roof, fell through the roof, injured himself, and he sued the shopping center for his injury, falling while trying to rob it. The court would say, no, you was called, you assumed the risk. Now, there were other things we could probably say about that ridiculous scenario, but the defense that the law used to apply is that you got yourself into this mess, so you can't sue somebody else for it. Similar to when people brawl, two men engage in a brawl, formal organized fight or something like that, and then they get injured. The law would say, well, you assumed the risk by engaging in this fight. So the thing is that here, Minnesota law 609.205, manslaughter in the second degree. And as I said, oftentimes, conceptually, maybe somebody did something wrong, but the prosecutors, the police frequently charge the wrong crime. Or many times there is no crime. If it was thought to be a crime, but you look through the books and it's not there. So here, number one is by the person's culpable negligence, whereby the person creates an unreasonable risk. Now, notice culpable negligence is an important means that it's legally wrongful. Like, for example, if someone were sleepwalking, we studied this actually, they might not be culpable, even though they slapped somebody in their sleep. So culpable is an important qualifier. It means that it's illegal what they did. And this creates an unreasonable risk and consciously takes chances of causing death or great bodily harm to another. Here, the unreasonable risk was created by, Monte, looking for while driving.
I know who you mean, yeah. So this is a guy that tried to, I forget his name too, Duarte something. He tried to escape. He was ordered not to. He drove off. And I'm not exactly clear. I really haven't followed the story myself too. But I guess they when they did stop him, you know, this is where the female officer thought she had a taser and actually had a gun and shot and killed him. That's how it works, right?
Okay. Right. He was stopped for a traffic stop, and you know people
right.
know it's only a traffic stop. It's often when violence occurs, because somebody knows that they are going to get in trouble. He had a warrant out for his arrest for strangling a woman, and which is his own crime, strangulation, and and robbing. Had a warrant out for his arrest for. And, also, I believe it's the one who's appeared to be going back to his car to flee or in a knife or something like that. And so,
it's really hard to hear you right now. I'm letting it go just because I want to see if people can turn it up and possibly, you know, get this. But we're breaking up it. I want to get Pianki. Maybe he can fill in some of the details here. But keep going for a little bit more. I want you to finish where we are. Jonathan, all right, let me get Pianki on the line here, see if he can help out, explain this a little bit, and then we'll get to the legal principles. There goes Jonathan. All right, so he's in a bad area. Pianki, can you explain this, you know, exactly what's going on with this case? You've probably looked into it more than I have.
Well, I can hardly hear Jonathan. What I was going to ask Jonathan, at what point in time do a suspect in their attempt to flee is also should be accused and responsible for the outcomes of that flight. We've seen suspects who in their vehicle and all of a sudden they take off being questioned by the police. They take off and, you know, they get out on the road and have collisions with other cars, with other motorists. So at what point in time are the suspects themselves responsible for the actions that they call for a illegal flight?
Yeah. Well, I don't think Jonathan's on the line, too. I don't think Duarte is responsible for, obviously not responsible for getting shot instead of tased, but he is responsible for leaving the scene when he was ordered not to. And so does that mean he gives up the right to his life for doing so? No. But on the other hand, you know, he did create the situation, and those are the extra circumstances I'm sure Jonathan will talk about. He created the situation that caused the stress that may have led to his death. You know, because he fled the scene when he was ordered not to. Anyway, Jonathan's back. So Jonathan, did you hear the question from Pianki?
Yeah, and so I hope I said it. So the thing is that under this particular statute, which is what lawyers do and judges are supposed to do, is that who created the risk determines whether or not the person is guilty. Now you could say, well, it's wrongful. You know, he was negligent. For example, if a family sued over negligence that she used the wrong gun, they'd probably win on a wrongful death suit. But the statute of manslaughter in Minnesota requires that if we're creating an unnecessary risk, who is responsible for the creating the scenario? And in that sense, it's the guy right, the guy who's wanted for arrest, who created the scenario by all of his actions, by resisting arrest. And the thing is, she called in the number. She knew he had an arrest warrant, so he wasn't, you know, he wasn't just being arrested again for, he was being arrested because there was an outstanding arrest warrant for a violent crime. And imagine if she had intended to use her police revolver and the taser never came into it. Would she have done anything wrong? Now for a traffic stop, yeah, it would have been wrong, but for him fleeing arrest from a violent arrest warrant, I'm not a Minnesota lawyer, but probably not. So,
well, wait a minute. So if he's not presenting an imminent danger to the police, though, that, you know, even if he is, you know, a suspect in a violent crime, they can always arrest him later without shooting him at the scene, kind of thing. In other words, to me, it would be a deprivation of your constitutional rights, even if you are a suspect, you know, not proven guilty yet, simply because, you know, you sort of negate the ability to bring this person to trial if they're killed at the scene. That doesn't make sense. As long as they're not posing a threat to the officers. If he is posing a threat, that's a different story. But that's the officer's judgment.
And I did this. I went through this analysis too with Ashley Babbitt's shooting.
Yeah, I want to hear more about that too.
The typical self defense analysis, if you're not a police officer, is one thing. It is augmented by the police officer's authority to arrest someone. So if they shoot them when it's necessary, pursuant to trying to arrest them, that's an additional grounds for using deadly force, or hopefully not deadly force, but potentially deadly force. So
wait, but you can't shoot somebody running away. If the police are chasing somebody, you can.
It depends on state law, but yes, they can.
That doesn't make sense.
If it's necessary, because again, the your analysis as an individual is different from someone trying to arrest someone. Like, for example, Ashley Babbitt, I would say the shooting was not necessary under D.C. law to effecting an arrest, because she was jumping through a window with four police officers behind her towards the shooter, U.S. Capitol Police. All he had to do when she jumped with no weapon, she landed on the ground was say, you're under arrest. Mm-hmm. There was no need to shoot her in order to effect an arrest.
Did he even say that, though?
That's the way D.C. law.
I don't remember in the video that the officer said anything.
No, but I'm saying she was on the ledge where the window was blown out, was broken out on a half door. You know, halfway door, halfway window, and she was standing in on top of the halfway door with her hands holding herself through the window opening. Clearly, no weapon, and there were three or four riot police within 5-10 feet behind her. So, if he could see that she had no weapon, posed no threat, and if it was necessary to arrest her, as soon as she had gone, he shot her before she went through the window opening in the half door. So, but if she had gone through towards him, all he would have had to do was just say, you know, you're under arrest, put your hands behind your back, and no shooting would have been necessary. I don't know Minnesota law, but if it's necessary to arrest somebody, depending on state law, they can shoot. Hopefully not to kill.
Even when you're running away? Well, they don't make that distinction, you know, because you can't. If you're shooting somebody, there's a good chance that, you know, there's every chance they're going to get killed or not killed. I mean, aiming for the leg kind of thing, well, we're just trying to wound you, that doesn't work.
Right.
Because you're still using deadly force.
Right. I mean, and again, I'm not saying what you might think is the best decision, because it's true. They probably will you know, that's why I argue that I don't think that the officers led by Derek Chauvin should have tried to arrest George Floyd over a $20 counterfeit bill. It appears at some point, although they did not articulate it, they didn't do their job all that well, that he would have been driving high, you know, way higher than a kite. They could not, you know, if they could have arrested him, as apparently they did, but they didn't say it clearly, that, you know, you are driving under the influence. We cannot let you get behind the wheel of that car and go kill somebody, you know, high on whatever drug you're on.
Mm-hmm.
And then resisting arrest. But the 20, you know, it is possible that if they had his driving record, they could have just gone looking for him later at his house. But he could have, you know, he would have run then too.
Well, he was handcuffed.
So
how was he
policy,
to drive anything? He was handcuffed. He couldn't drive
no,
anything.
No, no,
no.
I mean,
point.
Okay. I was switching back to Wright.
Okay.
If Wright had run away and the cop just let him run away.
Yeah, pick him up later.
And it says, well,
they know
now,
who he is, where he lives.
We now
have, you know?
Yeah, but they probably would have had a shootout then too. But that is a policy choice that I probably would make. But the law would allow the use of force necessary to make it an arrest, not beyond what is necessary to make an arrest.
I mean, if they already had him, then that makes sense. You know, I can keep my story straight here. But if he had pulled over and if he had stopped, they could use reasonable force. I think a taser is reasonable force to stop somebody from driving away. That makes perfect sense. I think shooting them is not. In fact, the officer was doing the right thing with the taser. In other words, immobilize him so he can't drive away. That makes sense. Now you prevent further injuries. You prevent whatever car chases and the resulting injuries and deaths potential from the car chase. And a lot of police departments have limited their car chases because of that. Because in this age of high technology, they know where people are. They can trace them, track them, you know, GPS and all kinds of stuff, their phones, and in ways that you couldn't do 50 years ago when they had to catch them or shoot them if they were running away simply because they present such a danger that once they run away, they're actually away. But these days, nobody's away. Anybody can be found.
Yeah.
You know, there's only some, you know, but, yeah, go ahead. This is why it's different.
Those are policy choices. The law developed before tasers, you know, were invented.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly before, you know, before the police officer could pull the computer screen over from the passenger side and punch in and get all this information right there in the police cruiser.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably the wiser course of action to just go, certainly with George Floyd and of course, they couldn't let him drive away.
They could have shut out the tires or, you know, why didn't they use those tire chain things?
They could have done that.
You know.
But for example, somebody was saying, "Well, he wasn't driving." Well, under the law, if you're in the driver's seat of the car and the keys are in the thing, you're driving. Like it's a DWI, even if your engine is off and you're not going anywhere, DWI applies.
Yeah.
DUI, driving under the influence of drugs. So they could say, "Well, look, we couldn't let you drive away, and you know you're going to kill someone in this car." But I don't think that they very clearly explained that. Now, the similar one in here in Windsor, Virginia, where the soldier was belligerent to a cop. You know, he kept. You really don't have a right to have the police officer tell you why they're arresting you. And I'm driving right now to a place where somebody had a long, you know, he's clearly not drunk on the tape, but he's being a jerk by continually badgering, like, why are you arresting him? The police officer, Derek Chauvin and these others would have been better off if they had said, look, we were talking to you about a $20 counterfeit bill, but now we're worried that you're driving, you know, we cannot let you drive away in this car because you're out of your mind with drugs.
Yeah.
If they had verbalized that on the tape and anyone was paying attention, it probably would have looked much better for them. But I don't know that they ever charged him with driving while, I can't think of the cliches, but just you know, on another planet with drugs. Anyway, so
yeah.
That's what I see. But I think, again, what often happens with these things is that, especially with a criminal charge, it has to fit the statute. And here, the prosecution will focus on she created an unreasonable risk by pulling the wrong weapon. I think the correct analysis is that the criminal there or the with an arrest warrant out for him created the unreasonable risk. You know, by his definition, he created. You know, that's the thing. It's like so how it's looked at. I think that she cannot be guilty of manslaughter under Minnesota law. Now, I think other common law and other things may apply, but Minnesota law does not. And so,
I think it's manslaughter. It wasn't premeditated, but criminally negligent homicide. And I got Josie in the line too. I'll get to her in a minute.
Well,
I don't know how much time
the
Jonathan
way Minnesota
had.
Defines the way Minnesota defines manslaughter is almost like depraved heart murder,
okay.
Old common law term, meaning that someone is just so wrecked, like shooting into a crowd. You have no intention to shoot anybody, but it's inherently so risky that you're guilty if somebody gets hit. And that's why Minnesota's manslaughter. I don't think that's the normal common law manslaughter. Manslaughter would just be, you know, but it's close. It'd be you're creating an unnecessary, unreasonable risk, and somebody dies because of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that's
hey,
the particular man. Go ahead.
What's the appropriate way for an officer to approach a known felon with a taser or with a weapon?
I think with a felon, with a firearm. I mean, somebody is a known felon. Right. I mean, if she had never, I mean, imagine if she had never thought about her taser. Now, it may be departmental policy and Minnesota law that she's supposed to use her taser and not her gun. But in terms of being criminally liable for it, now, again, I think as Greg pointed out, he had an arrest warrant for this violent episode. Maybe he wouldn't have been found not guilty if he'd gone to court. You know, because and it would be a felony. He's alleged to be a felon. But he hadn't yet gone to trial on those charges. That's true.
Yeah. Now, was he posing an imminent threat, though? I work on the violence theory. In other words, and I don't know the details of this one, but if I think it's Duarte posed an imminent threat to the officers that he was going to either drag somebody with him with the car in with the door closed or was going to do great bodily harm and use the car as a weapon against the police, then they're fully justified in using their firearms. You know, however, if that wasn't the situation, and it's hard to judge, it shows that he was just trying to get away and he wasn't trying to entrap the officers, you know, in the door and wasn't trying to use the car as a weapon. He was only trying to get away. Then the taser is perfectly appropriate. And like I say, if he gets away, they can follow him or they can pick him up later. There's all these different options, but you know, the law enforcement training I went through was pretty thorough and you better damn well know the difference between a gun and a taser. That is part of being a police officer. That is your job, and if you don't know that difference, that's criminal negligence. I think that you've screwed up, you know, it may be unintentional, but you should. There's a point where we entrust officers with, you know, badges and guns and a whole lot more authority than we trust the average person with. So that coming with that with that authority comes a responsibility to know what you've got your hands on, you know, whether it's a gun or a taser. So I fault the officer,
right?
The same way I fault the person
who
shot the person back in BART at the BART station back in California. The officer should have known better.
But again, in the law and what we're trying to understand is oftentimes more than one person is at fault for something. You know, it isn't,
well,
we ought to have to think of like A is either A is responsible or B is responsible. Many times it's not that simple. I mean,
yeah.
She's clearly screwed up. And you know, in the days before body cams, we would never have known that. You know, so but the question is, it's like in terms of manslaughter, who you know, for example, easily she should be fired. She could probably lose a wrongful death. Well, I don't know, like in Virginia, Contributory negligence is an absolute block to winning a lawsuit of that nature. But the thing is that she clearly made a major screw up. Before there were body cam videos, who would have said that the fact that she screwed up like that would probably never be known. But,
well, the gun's on
the
camera.
But
the
question
the gun's on the body camera. She's holding it out in front of her. You know, she's.
Right. But I'm saying 20 years ago.
Yeah.
20 years ago, we wouldn't have had body cameras, and I'm glad we do. But the thing is that who, in terms of whether or not it's manslaughter, you have to ask under the law who created this scenario.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, Josie and I are clear on the line. Who called in early to join us? Claire, I'll get you in just a quick second. Yeah. Jonathan, how are you doing for time?
Just about exiting towards the courthouse down here.
That's what I figured.
I've got about 5 minutes.
Oh, okay. That's pretty good. Josie, do you have a question?
I could get off now, but go ahead.
No, that's okay.
Well, first of all, if these criminal clowns would obey the law, that shouldn't be any problem in America. But they don't want to obey with our officers. And she clearly made a mistake by watching the video that I watched. So he got what he deserved in a way, but in another way, she made a mistake. And you can see it. So, and it looks like she was a new cop. The other thing about Washington, D.C. on the 6th, they just shot her. And look at all these people rioting, looting, killing. They shoot them with rubber bullets. How come they didn't do that in D.C. for this woman? So we think that all this was a show, that woman is still alive, unless you can prove me with pictures of her and the autopsy table and the coffin inside. But people are saying, I'm waiting for a video to come in to me, that saying they discovered that she's alive, that it's alive.
I don't believe that.
The whole thing on the 6th. Well, I'm trying to find out, so I'll let you know.
All right. Well, let me ask Jonathan just before you go, and I'm going to make Claire's line live too so she can jump into this. This is our free-for-all Thursday. The most important thing right now, I think, is to find out who this officer is that shot Ashley Babbitt. This is a ridiculous time lag. You know, remember the case, who was the person that shot the or ran over the officers, the Capitol Police officers? He turned out to be black and a Muslim and a member of the Nation of Islam Church. Didn't fit the narrative of the white racist, you know, southern white supremacist that the media was desperate for. Is it a possibility that the officer who shot Ashley Babbitt also doesn't fit the narrative, and that's why this is being covered up? Or is she possibly, you know, Nancy Pelosi's personal bodyguard, and she doesn't want to get involved? There's a reason that this identity is being covered up, which makes me really suspicious. So we need to find out who this person is.
Well, I mean, it's a he. It's clearly the man who shot Ashley Babbitt is seen on video. It's a man. And it's not, he did not have a uniform. He was a plain clothes person. So being a bodyguard for someone like Nancy Pelosi is highly likely.
Okay.
But they're not releasing that person. I hope that Ashley Babbitt's family gets a good lawyer, and there are plenty of bad ones. They will be able to find that out. But they're obviously covering for this. And
Jonathan, as he's plain clothes, should he have not announced himself?
Absolutely. I mean, in any event, he should have announced himself. But part of the problem is there was a lot of noise. And so we don't know if he tried to announce himself or not. But on the other hand, with that much noise, I think it's his responsibility to realize he can't be heard.
She's crawling through a window. What kind of threat did she pose? You know, this is the part I don't understand either.
And because she's crawling through the window, her hands are up against the sides of the window opening. So you can see that she's got no weapon. She's steadying herself with her hands, or her empty hands, in the window opening. So she clearly has no weapon.
Yeah, it looks like more of an assassination than anything else to me. But we need to find out who this person is. That is, and where's the arrest record? You know, is this being censored too? I mean, the officer, the person involved has to be documented somewhere. You know,
he was never arrested. They just did an investigation, decided not to charge him.
But he's on administrative leave, so who's missing from the department right now? Do we know which department it is at least?
That would be when we used to have journalists. They would have figured that out.
Yeah. Interesting.
Before you go, Jonathan, at some point in time, in the case of Deontay, at some point in time, the suspect has to be responsible for the events that occur for them not complying lawfully.
Right, and we've lost that in our society. That no longer exists. Like George Floyd's family getting $29 million. That's just a shakedown. Our society has degenerated so much that concept is gone. Unfortunately, I don't know what else to say except
no, that's
terrible.
That's
you're right.
Pretty amazing where it is itself. Yeah, Claire, you're at Lions Live. Do you want to get in on this? And we'll get to actually. John was able to stay longer than I expected, so it worked out pretty well.
Yeah, me too. I'm parking now, so I got to go running late.
Go. I don't want you to
all right.
Miss your court date. I appreciate you being devotion to Action Radio. I love it. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
All right. Talk to you soon. Thank you, Ben.
Sounds good. Thanks, Jonathan. Claire, do you want to get on this? Are you familiar with these local cases and the local laws? And what do you have to say about this?
Yeah, I've been listening in for the last few minutes anyway. And the whole conversation, but the last few minutes. And, I can't agree more with a couple of the points the others have made. Number one, that there is a two-tiered system of government or of justice right now. People who violate the law but have the right, in air quotes, political persuasions, don't face any consequences for violating the law.
Mm-hmm.
Others don't even violate the law but have the wrong political persuasion, have the book thrown at them. This is the collapse of our society. It's the collapse of the rule of law and order, the collapse of the Constitution. And if we don't fix it pretty quick, we're going to lose the republic.
Yeah, I'm looking at it from my own personal point of view. I've got this 30-day suspension on Facebook, which is why I can't post the show, and I'm always asking you folks to put things on my Facebook page, to cover while this is going on. We had leftist trolls come on my personal page, and I didn't object to them. I said, okay, you can spout your lies and things like that, but we're going to call you on it. And I did. Then they accused me of bullying, and Facebook takes me. From my personal page, from people are posting on my page, and they take me off Facebook. So the two-tiered system of justice is ridiculous of what's going on. I personally think that person that basically assassinated Ashley Babbitt is probably Nancy Pelosi's bodyguard or somehow connected with her, because why else would it be such a big secret? Why else? If it were Capitol Police or some other department, they'd hang that officer out to dry, protect their department, they'd move on.
No. They were going to go after anybody that they could get their hands on in that that event at the Capitol on the 6th of January. Basically, some disorderly conduct. That's what that was. It was disorderly conduct. They were going to go after any of them that they could possibly get their hands on, and anybody else on the other side, it doesn't matter who they were. Anonymous member of Capitol Police, that's probably who that was. Going to get a pass no matter what they do, and that was flat out murder. That was murder.
Yeah, literally getting away with murder, as they say. Josie,
How can we find out if she's really dead? Can you find out?
If what?
That she's really dead. This veteran.
Of course she's dead. We could see her on the video. She was. Of course she's dead.
Josie has theories
that
Josie has interesting theories that fascinating about Josie is the theories that she comes to the show with, like JFK Jr. is still alive and some other things, and there were basically you said somebody was military operations that were going to take over after Trump, and so I kind of count on you to bring the theories that a lot of people are thinking that I don't think anything of, because they make absolutely no sense to me. But Ashley Babbitt's dead. Her family would not be pursuing this.
I wish it were not so, but she's dead.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, too. It's always nice to have you on after Jonathan because he raises the legal issues here, and then we see the pattern of what's going on in other countries. If you have a few minutes to kind of tell us about two-tier justice, you know, I know this has happened in communist countries, dictatorships. You know, there's the favored. This happened back with, you know, I'm sure it goes back to monarchies, you know, 1,000 years ago. I'm sure the English kings would favor their nobles that they favored and those they didn't favor get their heads chopped off. So this is not
new. Think of the story of Robin Hood and, you know, the Sheriff of Nottingham and King John. And, you know, that was a perfect example. And that was what? Yeah, 1,000 years ago or whatever.
Yeah. It's interesting that Robin Hood did not rob from the rich and give to the poor. He robbed from the government and gave people their taxes back. Let's get the story straight.
Well, he was a highwayman, you know, and he you know, stuck people up and relieved them of their wealth and redistributed it. Yeah, but yeah. But again, well, I mean, it's an example of the two-tiered system of justice, and it happens when, you know, the forces of evil are allowed to seize complete power, and that's what we're seeing going on in the United States right now. It's a Marxist communist revolution, and those who work with them.
Well, see, this is the problem I have, is that standing up to these people would not be hard to do. We've talked about that. I think we talked about that last week. And the problem is, it's almost like there's two parts to this problem. One is the leftist Marxists that want to take over the country, destroy us, and bring about their communist utopia, which we all know doesn't exist, yet they are still convinced they can do it. That's bad enough. But the part that I think is worse are those that go along with it, the Republican, you know, co-conspirators, the enablers, the people that don't take the actions they could. And I spelled out a bunch of actions that would be very simple to do. One, you know, Mitch McConnell could say, we're all leaving. We're not going to give you a quorum. We're shutting this Congress down until this ongoing investigation, as I'm now calling it, to the 2020 election is complete. Congress should be doing nothing until that's complete. That's the single most important thing facing our nation right now was that election fairly decided? I would say no. And in fact, evidence is coming out. Arizona is going to do their Maricopa County audit starting April 22nd. That's going to be the show tomorrow. All right, so I'm going to be looking
into
that.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, this is check Gateway Pundit. And in fact, I do an election correction report every Wednesday, and so feel free to get on that. And the articles that appear on that, because I can't post them on Facebook, are at my Parler account at Greg Penglis. So Parler is where I post all the good stuff, including that brilliant article by Peter Navarro, who's looking into the origins of the coronavirus. And I have to get word to him. I don't know if you have any connection to Peter Navarro, Claire, or if you know anybody that knows somebody, but they're all looking at the wrong thing. Yes, you want to find out the origin of the coronavirus, but the real story is the origin of the corona vaccine. That's the story. This goes back 10 years. This goes back to the 2007 guidelines. This goes back in you know, just the story is fascinating. I'm still looking into it. I've got a whole timeline. I keep adding to it, and everything makes sense. If you look at it in terms of the vaccine, the virus makes perfect sense as to why it was created, why the gain-of-function research, why the money sent to Wuhan illegally, why it went unreviewed and no oversight by Dr. Fascist, you know, why the NIH bypassed Trump. Everything makes sense if you look at it that. Maybe we can get on the bit. I want to go back to where we originally started this conversation. My ADHD is taking over again. But the enablers. So Claire, let's talk about the fact that the stimulus and the new infrastructure bill are not reconciliation bills. Congress could stop that. Republicans could have stopped the lockdowns using their interstate commerce power. They could recall the Supreme Court justices who aren't doing their job because they're only there for terms of good behavior. The mechanism is there, but what is possibly driving, you know, I know you talk about this as the one party, the uniparty, but these people, they're everybody's traitorous as the leftist Marxists.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I mean, another way to call them would be the controlled opposition.
Yeah.
The Republicans in Congress right now, with certain notable exceptions,
okay,
outstanding exceptions, aside from them, they're the controlled opposition.
But how are they being controlled? Are they controlling themselves? Are they thinking
I mean,
they're going to get
a way, you know, they're ideologically aligned with the other side. They don't really have any distinction in the way that they look at things. I mean, you know, they agree on opening the borders to allow floods of illegals into the country. Why? The Republican side wants cheap labor. The Democrat side wants future voters, future Democrat, election voters, supporters.
Yeah, but a lot of people are going to get killed.
They'll be alive.
When these criminals, when these criminals start killing people through drunk driving and murder and, all the other things that illegal aliens do that we have. I mean, yes, we have our own criminals that do that here, but we don't need to import them. And so when this starts happening, it's going to be some objections. It's like, how could you let these people in? As it turns out, more and more illegal aliens are going to be in the news, committing crimes, and the Biden insurrection isn't going to do anything.
That's the problem. They won't be in the news. They won't be. Crimes won't be covered because, the media is mm-hmm. basically, the arm of the Democrat Party, and they won't cover it. And then think about this: all of these different municipalities and cities and so forth that have defunded their police forces. That's just going to be an absolute nightmare for the poor people living there. Americans, actual American citizens living there.
Well, it's interesting what's happening. There's a couple of things that I find very encouraging. One, Americans, all Americans, minority Americans, LGBTQ Americans, I mean, every American you can think of is buying guns right now. They're taking responsibility for themselves, realizing that the government has failed. The other thing that's interesting is
they're scared to death.
Go ahead.
They're scared to death.
Yeah.
Of what's coming. They know.
That's fascinating. Here's something else that's fascinating, too. I'm curious about your reaction to Canada. And these, my people, my fellow Canadians are standing up and doing things that Canadians don't normally do. There's the Polish, I think, rabbi that threw what he called the Gestapo, the Nazi police, out of his synagogue, saying, "Nah, this is Passover. Get the hell out of here." But that's not the only time. There are restaurants now. There's some restaurant, I think, in Alberta. Western Canadians are different than Eastern Canadians. They're like the Wild West. They're still as rebellious as Canadians get. You're going to find Alberta, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, and British Columbia. And there's, I think there was a restaurant where the police came to, or the health department came to shut them down, which of course is bogus, the people said, "No, get the hell out of here. We're dining here. Leave us alone." This is great.
These videos have gone viral. I think a lot of people have seen them. I have. And, mm-hmm. It takes a lot to get people riled up, but, finally, it looks like it's beginning to happen up there in Canada, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is what I see. And Josie, you're still alive, so feel free to join us at any time. Jonathan's gone. Pianki's left. Pianki, you can come back, too. We're kind of – this is a really crazy Thursday.
Heard,
yeah. Go ahead, Pianki. Go ahead.
Now they're trying to pay $500 to nurses to take the vaccine in America. This is crazy.
Where'd you get that from? Where'd you get that from? Because I want to follow up on that. That's
talking
a good point.
About it. I'm trying to think. The Edge Report and also another guy was saying the same thing.
Okay.
Truth
well,
and RTV.
Anecdotally, I'll give you an anecdotal. I went to have some blood drawn for – I got a physical coming up next month. And just talking – I'm not going to mention names or places or anything, but the nurses and the people, the medical folks I talked to, they don't want to take the vaccine for the simple reason they don't know what's in it. So if the health professionals, and this is nationwide, this may even be worldwide, that medical professionals, the experts, the people that have the science, are not taking the vaccine. That I find fascinating.
And 40% of the Marines, and he was just checking because I was going through this Twitter. I don't have an account because they deleted me because of the
I'm
vaccine.
Sorry.
I made a comment. I didn't even
mm-hmm.
post anything, but they deleted me immediately. But I was reading somebody that posted that the Marines, 40% of them are refusing to take the vaccine, and probably the other military too, but he didn't check on that at the time.
Yeah.
And I hear stories every day about nurses that come to my store, especially some in the nursing home, that they say as soon as they get the vaccine, some of the older folks, they start having seizures within seconds receiving the vaccine. So she was almost in tears telling me about it, and she said, I don't know what's going to happen. We're going through dark times. I said, yeah, but people like you should come out to the TV or to any radio station and start talking about it. But they're afraid.
Yeah, then they lose
their
jobs. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So So Claire, you know, in intelligence world, are people talking about the lack of effectiveness, the fact that the Chinese have reported their vaccine is only 50% effective, which I find staggering. They reported that. But AstraZeneca's out of Denmark and the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, and these aren't even vaccines, they're messenger RNA genetic, you know, altering shots. Johnson & Johnson's been banned here. What's going on? You know, in the intelligence world, what are you folks looking into in terms of this?
Well, I don't belong to the intelligence world.
I haven't
for 21 years. So I really don't know what might be going on in inside of that world. But certainly the open media, to include the European media, international media, have reports, you know, abundant reports about these side effects. Of these different, genetic therapies is what they are. They're not vaccines at all. They're genetic therapies. And that goes for Johnson & Johnson. It goes for AstraZeneca, especially over there in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now there are problems here in the United States. They, you know, I don't know.
Well, you know, I haven't, you know, go ahead, speculate, feel free.
No, I'm just saying that the more, the data come out about how many people have been injured, how many people have died from these things, you know, the less confident everybody is getting about any of them.
Well, I still say that this is, the pandemic was created as a marketing campaign for the vaccines, so that Dr. Fascist and the Chinese and the WHO and all and Big Pharma could get rich, and they're willing
think they certainly jumped on the situation to take advantage of it, but the pandemic itself is a product of the Chinese biological weapons program that continues, and it's not just with coronaviruses, plural. It's with all kinds of other stuff you don't even want to think about. That's the basis of all of this. That's where this all comes from.
Yeah.
Now, what various players did to take advantage of things. Once this virus did get out, whether on purpose or by accident, that's the next, you know, chapter in the story. But the basis, the root of all of this is the Chinese biological weapons program.
Yeah. Yeah. And I still, maybe I'm looking at this a little more cynically, but it seems to me, well, here's a question for you. You know, given that this came out, you know, of China, maybe what, October, November of 2019, and really started affecting us in early 2020. Given that, even at warp speed, could messenger RNA vaccines have been developed in that short a time to combat this particular virus, which apparently is mutating now too? Or is it more likely that these vaccines were in process for, as I believe, and I'm still looking for the evidence, I mean, I can't prove it yet, but as I believe that these were in process for years, and I don't know, maybe they just tweaked the vaccine for this particular thing.
No,
but it
I mean,
sounds to,
you know, they,
you know,
they've been searching, they've been researching for vaccines going back, I don't know, a decade, a dozen years, whatever it is, to the first outbreaks of things like H1N1, swine flu, MERS, SARS-1. This isn't new. This is very many years in the past, and as soon as any of those emerged, and of course they were working on vaccines, and certainly any country, any rogue regime with a biological weapons program is going to be working simultaneously on vaccines, if for no one else than their own people, their own researchers and scientists.
Right.
Who are handling these deadly pathogens that they're creating in the lab. So, of course, I mean, this goes back a very long time because the coronaviruses have been a subject of study. And I mean the colds, which there is no vaccine for colds, vaccines for flus, different kind of flus. I mean, what SARS-2 is basically is a type of flu. And, you know, they've come up with vaccines for flus. They've come up with vaccines for different things, but not SARS-1, not for MERS, and not for H1N1 or swine flu either. So,
is there,
yeah, I mean,
are they engineered?
Work always goes hand in hand with virus research. That's just a given.
Do you know if swine flu and H1N1, are they products of Chinese labs also? Being part of the SARS MERS.
I think those are genuine zoonotics, you know, that jumped from animal to human.
So here's the next question then. Why abandon traditional vaccines which use genetic material of the actual virus? The big pardon?
Because they don't work. Because every year they try to come up with some kind of a cocktail of vaccine for the flu.
Right.
And it's not successful. Every year, tens of thousands of Americans die of the flu. I mean, except for this past year when nobody died of the flu because everybody was dying of
COVID.
SARS-CoV-2. They try. Coronaviruses are just extremely difficult to vaccinate against in the traditional way. And that's partly because of their structure, and it's partly because of the way they mutate. Viruses are notorious mutators. This is their nature. They mutate abundantly. They mutate, almost immediately once they're out, as it were, in the wild, if you want to say. That's just the nature of viruses. That's just what they do.
So, but this seems the first time that a messenger RNA genetic therapy has been used as opposed to a traditional vaccine.
Yeah, I think they
were somewhere along the line.
Because they knew the other ones didn't work.
Okay. Yeah, they're still getting flu shots based on that old technology, right?
Say again?
Well, the flu shots are still using the old technology.
Yeah, they are, and they know they don't work. I mean, you know, they're useless. I've never had a flu shot in my life, but I've never had flu in my life either, so that's good.
Yeah. Well, I haven't when I was a kid. It's no fun,
it. My entire life, I never had flu.
Wow. We should have your genetics looked at.
I know. I keep telling my daughter, be happy.
Yeah. No, that's
long
wonderful.
And prosper.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, Greg, in Connecticut, there is a video that somebody sent me. In Connecticut, they're going door-to-door, and one of the guys that he has a weapon in his hand, he says, if you didn't get the vaccine, we're going to make sure you do. And they show a couple of scenes where they have, like, handicapped kids, or nowadays special needs, of course, and they're forcing them to get the vaccine, and the young, it looked like a 16, 17-year-old girl, maybe a little more.
Yeah, people who are immune to the virus anyway.
Yeah, she's screaming and crying, and the parents are grabbing her and forcing her, and there's a team of our government, and it was reported by one of the TV stations over there, and that report is in there together with this video showing that
they're
going
the video.
Door to door to make sure you get the vaccine.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing I don't understand, too. 99.7% of the population is either immune, will get maybe mild symptoms, may not even know they have, you know, COVID, or may even get up to moderate symptoms, you know, and spend like a week or two, you know, coughing and hacking, doing the usual stuff like I think I had, you know, back December when I think I had this whole thing. And I've been perfectly healthy ever since, which, you know, and we either are immune or develop immunity to it. Why would you vaccinate people who have already done that? That makes no sense. This is why I think it's such a marketing campaign. It doesn't make sense to vaccinate
people.
Nobody
knows how long antibodies last or how effective, how strong they are after someone recovers from this virus. And also, no one knows how long the antibodies last or how strong they are after getting any one of these genetic therapies that they call vaccines. Nobody knows that. And we're seeing multiple reports of dozens, if not hundreds of people around the world who apparently come down with the virus after receiving... Yeah, one of these gene therapy shots.
Right. Marketing. I keep coming back to marketing for more sales and more vaccines. And then you get Dr. Fascist saying, well, you still have to wear a mask. You still have to social distance. You can't lead your – we told you if you took the vaccine, you're going to lead your normal life. But no.
He already knows it doesn't work.
Uh,
and and a doctor was talking about it yesterday, and he said 65% of your body, it's immune to all these viruses. And a lot of people already had COVID from years ago that they have flus and things. So COVID is already in your body, in your system, to resist all these viruses. And that's why many people like me or you, Greg, that got the COVID, and we recover. I recover within 5 days taking the hydroxychloroquine, acetromycin, the vitamin D3 is the most important one, and zinc and C.
Yeah, so see, I didn't even know about those, and I recovered. I recovered on 2 days rest, and I sounded horrible. Anybody that heard my shows, I should drag one of those out from December, like the end of December, beginning of January last year. I sounded terrible. That's when I started the guest hour, because I was sounded so bad, and my throat was so raw, and I was just miserable. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't do anything, you know. But and as soon as I was still working, which was stupid, but you know it was required. And because my day job didn't have sick days, but the weird thing was that I took 2 days off and I was fine. I've got a rock solid immune system, and I got over this thing really quickly. 2 days of rest, I was ready to go. I was back on the air. Life was great. Okay, and this is without taking anything because nobody knew what it was. We all thought it was just a bad cough or a bad cold or something like that. But everybody where I work got it. Everybody, you know,
they knew what it was because. They knew exactly what it was because they
weren't telling us
COVID-19.
Yeah.
So they knew they brought the virus in 2019 here into America.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's by design. You look at Event 201, you look at other events, you know, Event 201, which is run by the World Economic Forum. Okay. So why would you have an economic forum doing something medically? Wouldn't you have the World Medical Forum? Would you have the WHO doing it? No, because they wanted to manage the information. They wanted to suppress anything against what they wanted to do, because I still contend this is part of a massive marketing campaign. Now, let me ask Claire a question. Is there any country in the world you know that tests for immunity, COVID immunity, before giving a vaccine? Because if you're immune to it, you shouldn't even need the vaccine, or they're just giving the vaccine.
How do you test for immunity? I mean, if
antibodies.
Your body does not have the antibodies from having been exposed previously, and you simply have, let's say, a strong immune system, generally speaking, how do you test for that? All you can take a medical history from the person. You know, somebody like me, you know, who hasn't been sick in 37 years, I could tell them that. But you can't test for natural immunity absent antibodies in the system.
Okay, but if you have naturally a good immune system, how susceptible would you be to this thing? I would say not at all.
Obviously not. You wouldn't be. But
yeah.
You can't
so why would you...
for it except by taking a medical history, I would think.
Yeah, but what I see this, and this is where I come back to marketing again, is that there, as the situation in Connecticut, everybody's being required. I mean, I'm surprised jobs haven't required it, but I'm going to scream and yell if they do. But the thing is, there's no medical history that, like you're saying, which actually makes a lot of sense. There's no investigation per person to determine if this is needed individually. It's being done on a mass scale. It's like everybody has to get vaccinated, and then they get your life back, except you won't. So why is this so big on a worldwide scale where no country, it seems like, is checking on, you know, this kind of stuff? Or are people doing this and we're just not hearing about it? That's what I'm wondering.
Well, I mean, how do you check, again, how do you check for natural immunity absent antibodies from prior infection or the vaccine?
Well, just like you were saying, your immune system, all right? How about the age of the person? Why would you give this to anybody under 50, for example, or 60? Pick an age. You know, at what age, you know, people don't become,
well,
most people that have...
Fear. I mean, you know, fear has been injected into the global population that, you know, this is something horrible and deadly. It's definitely horrible, but it's not very deadly compared to other plagues throughout the world, the Black Plague, the Spanish flu, the, you know, all of that. It's just not very deadly at all.
Yeah, and that's the problem,
too. Greg,
Not for those side of it, of course, but for those, you know, compared to prior plagues that we've known about in the world, smallpox, for example.
Yeah. See, that's what I think vaccines should be for. If you've got a deadly disease, I'm sorry, Jesse, I'll get you a second, but a deadly disease makes sense to get a vaccine out. But this is 99.97% recoverable completely with no permanent effects.
That seems crazy to me.
That would make a very small pool of people who actually need the vaccine. That's why I think it's marketing. It's just not making sense to me.
Everything's marketing. I mean, that's what makes the world go around, right?
Well, I don't mind that. I'm fully in favor of commerce, but I want legitimate commerce. I don't think this is legitimate commerce. I don't think inducing fear with people to force this and have government policy saying you better do this, you know, or the CDC offering guidelines that are not law, that are not regulation, that people are taking as law and regulation, that seems wrong to me.
I think there has been a disastrous loss of legitimacy of our major institutions, including public health institutions. The CDC, NIH will never, ever be trusted again in our lifetimes.
Well, rightly so, because they're not doing what they're supposed to do. The Center for Disease Control.
Yeah, I mean, what if they get something right? Their legitimacy will still be gone, and I think that's the dangerous part.
Well, they brought it on themselves. They screwed up. You know, you've got, I mean, the mere fact that Dr. Fascist is still earning $500,000 a year is irrational to me. I got a new caller. I want to bring on somebody here. It's a number I'm not familiar with. So 315 area code. If you want to join us here, first name, where are you calling from? And welcome to Action Radio. That's you. You who are thinking of talking. 315 area code.
You got somebody on the line?
I do. I'm waiting for them.
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Oh, good. Well, welcome to the show. Come on in. Have some fun. Tell us what you think. First name?
Rochelle.
Hi, Rochelle. Where are you calling from?
Syracuse, New York.
Well, welcome to the show. Did I
Thank
surprise
you?
Did you just want to listen or did you want to join us?
Well, of course I would like to join, but I wasn't sure what the topic was. But me hearing, listening, you're talking about the CDC, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. You can listen for a while, and I can get back to you in about 10 minutes if you want to do that.
Well, my issue with the CDC is because they had a coronavirus, warning and bylaws and stuff. But my issue, I think when I called here, I was assuming that it was for, like, parental rights with children being taken from home. So I may have called on the wrong night. But that's why I was listening in and calling.
No, that's fine.
For the
we have an action
matter.
You know, we have an Action Radio Family Law Project. We have, I think, 18 groups now that are specialty groups within Action Radio that cover a variety of different topics. And we do have, you know, regular family law reports. So I would go to the Family Law Project, join that if you haven't. And then when we have, just keep watching the schedule when we have something on, or you can suggest one, you know, make a posting on the Family Law Project page. Yeah, Jesse?
Greg, maybe she was listening to me that I said that in Connecticut, they're forcing children, handicapped kids to take the vaccine by force. And they're videotaping the whole thing, and maybe she listened to that. I don't know.
That could be.
But
well,
hey, you're from New York. We want to hear from you.
Yeah, how come you guys are still locked down up there? What's going on?
Well, I have a link or a site called Syracuse Soul Faith and Hope where the police broke into my home on July 25th, 2017, and I did make the news, but they muted me on the onset. You see me? You know, because I had recovered from brain cancer surgery, from a rare lung cancer. And because I beat the court system and won, retaliated because now we had to do an appeal. So when the five in-bank judges said, come in because there was errors in the record, they agreed with me. They retaliated 7 days later. So that's what started the Syracuse Soul Faith and Hope because my daughter's names are Faith and Hope. And the beautiful little girls, they didn't do anything to deserve the injury that they sustained and still sustaining. And they're lying to the U.S. attorney because I have special prosecution, prosecutor looking into the matter. But
well,
they
let me
are
hold you just for a little bit. Let me just hold
mm-hmm.
you because this sounds like a special topic that we should take, you know, with just you and me, and then we want to go with that. That's kind of, we're off topic a little bit for today. Give me that website one more time, Syracuse, what's it called? Hello? Syracuse, what's your website? Are you still there? Oh, okay.
Still here.
Yeah, okay. What's your website one more time? Because what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back to our discussion that we had before, and you're welcome to stay. And then we'll
I will.
Post your details on the Action Radio Family Law Project, and then let's talk about getting you on the show for there. So Syracuse, what was the rest of it?
Soul.
Website. So.
Faith and Hope at blogspot.com.
Syracuse Soul Faith and Hope?
Yep.
Okay, Faith, and it's
They'll actually, they censored me because I put the actual location of where my kids were.
Yeah.
So they'll actually, do you want to go inside and just say yes and go in and see the pictures and the evidence, because I beat the United States of America. I beat his behind. Oh.
No, hold on, hold on. Like I say, I'm going to hold you up for a second. I want the details later. Put them on our Facebook
Thank
page
you.
So I can take a look at it. But what I want to talk about now, because what's your first name again?
Rochelle.
Rochelle, there we go. Okay, I'm sorry. I should have put that down here. So Rochelle raises an interesting point, as does Josie. And we can talk about, and Claire, I'm curious your opinion as well, that family law, that judges, I know there are judges who have taken kids away because the kids aren't wearing masks. We have situations, and I'm sure this is now, that they could be child neglect could be called if you don't vaccinate. You're not following the program. You're not doing what the CDC recommended. Therefore, you're a bad parent. You can lose your kids. This is justification for a huge amount of abuse in this country. And again, let's relate it to other countries. You know, from Claire, have you seen that either family courts or taking away children or other means like this are used as coercion, you know, for people to follow any number of government policies? I'm going to close on this first. Claire?
I haven't seen any of that, but, it could be happening, I suppose. It would be unlawful. Situations like this have unleashed, you know, the petty tyrant in an awful lot of local jurisdictions, from mayors even to governors, who have, you know, these latent Marxist tyrannical tendencies, and they've been allowed to be unleashed.
Yeah. Yeah, and Josie and Rochelle, you guys can comment on this too. This seems part of the overall problem that the law, the Constitution, our rights are constantly being violated. And it really started last year when this whole lockdown thing happened, because people went under the belief that public health laws supersede the Constitution, that if you have a pandemic, your rights are subject to limitation. None of this, of course, is true. But now you've got judges, you know, going wild with their authority. You've got police going wild with their authority. You've got public health officials closing down every restaurant they can, you know, imagine doing, and especially up in Canada where people are resisting. And you had governors that were locking down. You had mayors that were locking down. And the ultimate irony of this is the places that are locked down the least, South Dakota, Florida, Texas, you know, have the fewest amount of cases of COVID. So the power hungry prove once again that it's the worst possible thing for society, because what they're doing is wrong and they don't care. They want the power. Was it Henry Kissinger said power is the ultimate aphrodisiac? I'm going to go around. Let's get Josie, Rochelle, and then back to Claire. Josie?
I believe all these leaders in our country should be arrested by taking our rights away. And they should be put in jail, all of them.
Okay.
They're violating our rights, and now they're forcing people to do the vaccine. And in Michigan, where my daughter lives, now they're saying everybody needs vaccinated. And they're saying, oh, the hospitals are packed to the max and all that, and people are freaking out to go run and get the vaccine. And it's not true. My daughter says COVID is almost gone in Michigan. She lives there. She sees what's going on. And it's all a lie.
Rochelle?
Yes. Well, my comment to that would be people should know their rights, and so that way you can exercise them with the three branches of government and have a meeting, like I am trying to get on the schedule. So the supremacy clause would be a case where you would fight, you know, not even so much fight, but just invoke your supremacy clause, right? Article 6 of the supremacy clause. So I would raise the supremacy clause and then do an objection. A lot of people will remain silent. Now, we're here talking, but you have to do an action. You have to do an affidavit. You have to notify these officials in writing by affidavit to let them know that you're serious and you want to sit down and you want to revisit these bills and let the, you know, the three branches of government, executively, predominantly, the president, basically, and sit down with them and let them know that we're not accepting this, and this is against what we, the people, want. So
well, you're in the right place
writing
here.
Down,
yeah, no, yeah, this is action radio. This isn't talk radio. Yeah. Let me tell you about just a couple things that we do. We have a website called writeyourlaws.com. That's WriteYourLaws. And one of the bills, our most recent one, and I'm really proud of this one. In fact, I'm working with Children's Health Defense, which is Robert Francis Kennedy Jr.'s organization, is to bring full product liability back to vaccine manufacturers. So let's hold them accountable. Mm-hmm. The bill is right there. It's on writeyourlaws.com, and you can find it. you know, very easily. And that might be something that you or Shell might want to take a look and go, this is good. Let's share this. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. So this is what we do here. This is the kind of action. So stick around. I think you're going to like what we do here. Claire, I'm curious, and like I say, I always like to bring this into the international scene and through history. Medicine. Who is it? Was it Stalin or Mao who said that, you know, the road to socialism is through medicine or something like that, that controlling health controls people. If you have their health care, you can make them do anything. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Well, I don't know which quote that is. The one that comes to mind, of course, is that Mao says power comes from the barrel of a gun.
Right. I remember that.
But you know, maybe what I would do here is to end us up on a positive note,
okay,
a little bit.
We still got 9 minutes.
And that is that across the entire country, mm-hmm, state after state after state, at the state legislative level and at the lower levels as well, common citizens, ordinary citizens, and those local representatives are proposing and passing bills into law that assert state authority, local jurisdictional authority, you know, against overreach by these power-hungry federal-level mandates that aren't laws even, but mandates. So look up. You know, these states are just all over the country, and I can't tell you how many laws have already passed in these states, dozens and dozens and dozens of them, that are standing up for states' rights, local jurisdiction, local authority, by the people, of the people, for the people, by the people, at the local level. This is happening across the country, and it's the right response.
Yeah.
It's the right way to push back on overreach by the federal government, and it's happening.
Yeah. Well, it's like we talked about earlier. You know, you talk about the Republicans being the controlled opposition. So people aren't looking to the federal. I think we've all given up on the federal folks, because even if the Republicans take the House in 2022, they might still have another, you know, Paul Ryan type speaker that'll totally co-opt and ruin, you know, anything that they try to do. We've got Tom from Missouri. We haven't heard from him for a while. He's on the line now. Let's bring this on. We just add people here. This is what we do. It's so much fun. Tom, welcome back to the show. Welcome back to Action Radio.
Hello. Hello to Ms. Lopez. I'm the fellow on Facebook we talked from. I think the quote you're thinking of is democracy is the road to socialism.
No. I mean, that is true. That is a definite quote. But there's some leader, and I forgot, I heard this, you know, again, this is all these things floating around in my ADHD brain, that healthcare, that controlling medicine, this is why it's one of the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto. I'm pretty sure. Claire knows it better than I do. But using medicine, this is why the Democrats want national health care, because this is why Michelle Obama said, you know, if you eat too many potato chips, we're not going to cover you. If you don't, and then they wanted to bring gun ownership into this too, and they said, well, you know, these are dangerous objects. You know, the CDC has determined that gun ownership is a mental illness. They were actually studying that. It's another reason the CDC lost credibility.
There's a logic to that. I just thought maybe you had your quote mixed up.
Your quote's right. I just think there are several quotes here going on. But that medicine is one of the ways that Marxist, socialist, you know, dictatorships, you know, communists control people. Because if you control a person's access to health care, you can coerce all kinds of behavior from them. And this isn't new, but what if they said you can't own guns and get your national health care? You know, we have the right to own guns.
That's how my mother turned against Obamacare. I told her
they could control
how many Big Macs she could have, and she said, they can't do that. I said, well, if they're paying your medical bills, and she goes, yep, they could control what I eat then.
So this is Medicare you're talking about?
No, that was Obamacare. They turned her
Obamacare
against Obamacare,
okay,
back in 2009.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. Josie, you had a comment? I thought I heard your voice too.
Yes. From Nicaragua, my whole family is still over there, most of my family. They have the socialist health care, so you're absolutely right. They want to be in control of your health care because you don't have no power about it. Unless you're super, super rich in Nicaragua, you can go to a private doctor. But it's not like my sister was going to have a thyroid operation. They put her in the bed. This is a couple years ago. And they put all the IVs and everything prepared for her surgery. And 2 hours later, I said, you have to leave because we're bringing a staff from Cuba that we have to take care of them first. So my sister was kicked out of the bed with about 18 people at that time. And then they schedule her for 2 more weeks later. So they're in control and power of your life. And that's what Obamacare was all about.
Okay. So did Obamacare did Obamacare lead to – Tom left us. Too bad. It was fun. I haven't heard from him for several months. This is a clear question. Did Obamacare lead to, you know, what's going on now with the CDC with the lockdowns? Did they get power during Obamacare as like a practice, as like a run-through for what's happening now with this incredible incentive that everybody should be vaccinated or you're just not a good person? You know, same thing with wearing a mask.
I mean, remember, the CDC has – and the NIH – Health and Human Services, they have absolutely zero power to lock down anybody.
Right.
They put out misleading and mistaken information.
They lied.
But the lockdowns were affected by local-level tyrants at the township, city, municipality, state mm-hmm. level. The CDC has no power to do any of that. Local elected officials who did this.
Mm-hmm. And they were saying, well, we're just following CDC guidelines. And my question was, why? Those guidelines are wrong. Rochelle, Syracuse, you guys are still following the CDC guidelines? I mean, you've got Cuomo there. I'm sorry, you know, for you guys. But what's happening there? Are you going to get your freedom back? What do you think?
Nope. We're still mandated to wear masks, and people are, you know, getting into arguments and stuff in the store if you don't wear the mask. And, it's, you know. And I remember the governor stated on the news saying, you know, let the people handle it. You know, like, you want us to fight about a mask, and we don't even have the proper mask if there's really an airborne agent, you know, chemical or any kind of anything that's impeding our health in the air. We don't have the proper equipment on anyway. So mm-hmm. we would be goners anyway. So it doesn't make any sense, but, you know, to spare, you know, make sure you live and survive, you know, just from the attack from the people or the police. You have to do it because you're being forced. So that their goals are freedoms right there. But what can you do right now because you don't have enough people standing or even sitting in office? And a lot of the judges a lot of the people in charge, anybody can probably take their position if we just get into some of these offices. From what I'm reading about a judge, he doesn't have any schooling, and some of these officials, we got to start filling these seats and, you know, taking the majority over because they're out of control here. It's out of control.
That's the point that Claire's been making. No, that's an excellent point. And Claire's been saying the same thing, is that local people have to get involved. You know, I think there was this kind of stigma that you couldn't be a judge unless you were a learned person, that you graduated from Ivy League college and you had to go to, you know, you had to have the proper credentials before being a judge, when in reality, you're appointed by the governor if you're friends. so people join, you know, Rochelle, join your school board. Do the things that, you know, I mean, a lot of people have suggested this. Get involved in local politics, because you listen to Jonathan Mosley, who was on, I think, before you called in. He's our legal expert. He has nothing but contempt for judges because they do stupid things all the time. They don't follow the law. They certainly don't follow the Constitution. And it seems like the same thing happened here with the lockdowns, because I remember, you know, Dr. Fascist, who that's what I call Dr. Anthony Fauci, when he made a little slip in one of his press conferences and said, I talk to governors all the time. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, why are you talking to governors all the time? And that's when the lockdowns are starting to come in. So I think they were coordinated to the CDC. The CDC doesn't have the power to do that, but I think they either lied or used guilt or something to inspire all these lockdowns, saying, if you don't do this, millions of people are going to die, which, of course, was a bunch of nonsense. Yeah, that's how they used to control people, which gets back to Obamacare, which gets back to control, which gets back to, you know, the whole idea that this is, you know, we are the last example of a series of nations around the world that have lost their liberty through various means, and medicine is just one of them. Claire, we've got a minute. I'm going to give it to you.
Yeah, no, my greatest disappointment in all of this, I think, mm-hmm. is coming to the realization of how many Americans are not only dumb as a lug nut, stupid to follow, to fall in line with all of this, but also sheep, willing to just give up their freedoms at the drop of a hat because somebody said you're going to get the flu. Mm-hmm. This just, it's overwhelmingly disappointing to me to see how many Americans, I just disappointed in my fellow Americans tremendously.
Yeah, but you know, there's hope, and I think you said it best earlier. And the Rochelles and the Josies and me too. You know, with Action Radio, that people are starting to run for office, and they're standing up, and they're saying this is not acceptable. And my little town of Milton, Florida, here, which refused to have a mask mandate, and that made national news. You know, the defiance is there. And I think people have realized that you cannot count on your elected officials to do their job, so we have to do their job. And in reality, it always was our job. Anyway,
true.
On that note, thank
and
you.
You're right. We should be encouraged by that part of America. Mm-hmm. You're right. Yeah.
Anyway, Rochelle, please join our Action Radio Family Law Project. I want to talk to you more. I want to hear your whole case, but I want to give you an hour to do it. Just not this one. So we'll get you soon. Tomorrow, Arizona, the first domino that's going to fall. And so we'll see if they're the ones that lead us to the election correction and reversing the insurrection that's going on in the White House. Rochelle, Claire, thank you very much. Thank you, everybody, for the Today Show. Greg Penglis here for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Back tomorrow at 7 a.m. Central Time.